Good evening, and welcome to the third and final debate in the race for governor. Tonight, the two major contenders are with us in the studio, and they are Governor John Engler, who was elected to the Michigan House in 1970, elected to the state Senate in 1978, and elected governor in 1990. Governor, nice to have you on our program.
It's good to be here, Tim.
And Congressman Howard Wolpe, the Democratic challenger, is with us, elected to the Kalamazoo City Commission in 1969, elected to the Michigan House in 1972, elected to Congress in 1978, and served there until 1992. Gentlemen, as you know, there are basically no rules to our format tonight, so let's get into the questions. Congressman, what's the one thing that impresses you most about John Engler or his record as governor?
His consistency. He has been a governor who I think really believes strongly in trickle-down economics, in the notion that somehow if you protect the most powerful and the wealthy, give them the largest tax breaks, that is how the rest of the society will do better. He's been consistent in that. He's been out there fighting on behalf of the utility industry, on behalf of the some of the largest corporations,
why
the
does
banks,
that impress
the utilities.
You? Why does that impress you?
Well, just for his consistency. I think he's out of touch with what's really happening across the state. And I think that what's happening is that all working families across the state and people who are really working hard, who obey the law, who care deeply about the future of the state and the kind of future they want for their children, have been left out in the process.
Is that true?
Absolutely not. I think that that is really sums up, though, the congressman's campaign. It's been a campaign of attack against me without pausing to state an agenda for himself. He's a liberal congressman, served a lot of years in Washington, has got a very, very defined record. And it's really remarkable, in one sense, I suppose, that after being nominated and having an opportunity to lay out an agenda, here we are with 2 weeks to go, and there's no Wolpe agenda. The whole campaign has been spent reviewing some of the things that I've done, and that's in sharp contrast to what I've done in terms of both laying a foundation in the first term and then an 80-point agenda for the future, where we go from here. We're going to continue to cut taxes, to reform welfare, to reform education, to be a leader nationally. We're being talked about now as a state because of the changes we're making, and the response in the economy is tremendous.
What impresses you about him and his record?
Oh, I think the liberalism. I mean, he is a true 1970s liberal, tax and spend liberal.
And why does that impress you?
Because I didn't think anybody like that could even get nominated today. He was the most liberal candidate. AFL-CIO boss Frank Garrison got him through the primary, and here he is. I think he's everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party today, and one of the reasons it appears poised to be getting a historic drubbing this November. They simply have lost track of families and taxpayers. Their reliance on government as the be-all and the end-all, government the solution, I think is out of step with America.
But let me say, if there's anyone who is outside of the political mainstream of our state, it is John Engler, the present governor. This is a governor who has launched a fundamental assault upon the institution that is the most vital to the whole future of the state, to our democracy, public education. This is a governor that is trying to take public tax dollars, divert them into private institutions. It's said he's even open to changing the Michigan Constitution to permit aid to private and religious schools. This is the governor who has a position that is so extreme on the issue of choice. We know he's anti-choice. I don't think that people realize
well,
just
let's deal with education,
how,
I think that is the issue that a lot of people want to talk about.
I don't think people realize how extreme a position he has even on the issue of abortion.
All right, Governor.
On the education issue, let's deal with that, because Congressman Wolpe is a candidate from the Michigan Education Association. He's their candidate now. He wasn't in the primary, but they adopted him immediately after.
What's wrong with that?
Because I think this interest group, with the powerful resources and money, he was in Washington, their national headquarters, raising money. He's been very involved with them.
You've never gone to Washington to raise money?
No, not from the National Education Association. I think the issue in education today is, how do we empower parents? When do we put the kids first? I mean, I think education is about children. The 1.6 million kids in our public schools, and I care deeply about our public schools. That's why we've tackled with fundamental reform, the funding reform that the New York Times called the most sweeping financial reform in a century, something that over 25 years has eluded governors in both parties. And we got it done. 25 states, congressmen, across the country today are entangled in court orders or litigation,
Congressman, 25
states in court or under court orders to change their system of funding education. We've moved beyond that into education reform, which is opening up choice
right,
and competition for parents.
Governor, what you have done is to put a $1 billion time bomb under the children of the state and under the future of the state. That is the projected shortfall in public education only the year after next. That's irresponsible. That is undermining the
That's
future.
That's also not true.
That's undermining the future of education.
And we should stick to the facts tonight.
And it is true, and you know it is true.
It's not true. In fact, I have the information right in my pocket here. I've got it right here. Do you want me to get the facts out?
In the school education fund, there will be a $1 billion shortfall.
No, they won't.
Congressman, do you have that in writing from someone? Yeah, is that not a hypothetical?
Public sector.
I've got it here.
You have one consulting firm in town that says that, okay?
That's correct.
Does that make it true?
Well, is the Michigan Treasury Department disagrees with it?
Just a second. Does that make it true?
I think it is true.
Governor, isn't it true that indeed could happen down the road?
I don't think
if there's a shortfall in the sales tax and the cigarette tax, all of that other stuff comes together.
Congressman Wolpe and Michigan Education Association in January and February argued, along with the tobacco companies, there wouldn't be enough money to fund the schools.
The question here tonight is, can you promise here tonight that there's not going to be a shortfall?
Absolutely.
You can.
Absolutely. I can make that guarantee. There will not be a shortfall.
And you don't believe it.
I do not believe that.
But he doesn't
care so little about public education that he has actually transferred $42 million, over $42 million, most of which was targeted for the public schools, to the tobacco merchants of the state. He managed to take
Let me get back to my question.
If he is out of the mainstream, how the heck did he get elected?
Oh, he got elected because Democrats lost an election.
So he didn't want it. The Democrats lost.
If he's out of the mainstream,
how did he continually get elected in a Republican district? He's a Democrat.
I apologize for some of the candidates that ran against him and the campaigns and the lack of funds that they had. Failure to get his record. Well, I'll tell you what.
It was not a fluke, was it?
Absolutely, it was a fluke.
Every time he was elected, it was a fluke.
What he could do in a congressional district is what every congressman tries to do. And in fact, we're going to beat some congressmen who are liberal, Washington-oriented, special interest-dominated, just like Congressman Wolpe this time. You watch, out across Michigan, you're going to see congressmen like Levin, you're going to see congressmen like Kildee, and they're going down this time because what's happening is that in this election, finally issues are breaking through, and no longer does constituent service save those members. Congressman Wolpe is a good constituent service. He answers the mail, but I think the real issue is, how come, Congressman, all of those years in Washington, you didn't solve the problem, so we didn't have the constituent burden? And I think that's the
Congressman's response.
Well, we had a little problem there as well, Reagan and Bush, and trickle-down economics and burgeoning deficits and jobs going overseas.
But now it's Clinton.
We had a few other problems as well. Let me just say... Tony Coelho. I want to pursue this issue about who is in the mainstream and who is not in the mainstream. Not only is this governor changing the Constitution, the Michigan Constitution, to take public tax dollars out of public schools and shifting them over to the private academies.
All right, let's resolve that issue here and tonight. Governor, if that issue is on the ballot, would you support it and vote yes on it?
No.
You would not?
No, it's not on the ballot. I don't support the issue. I don't support spending.
If it is on the ballot in 2 years or 4 years, however it gets there, to divert public tax dollars...
I do not support using public funds for religious schools.
So you would vote no on that constitutional
Absolutely, and I'm not going to lead the fight. I'm not going to change the constitution. I want to change
the
constitution.
And if it's on the ballot, you would vote no.
Absolutely.
Why did you...
Mr. Wolpe, doesn't that answer your question?
No, it does not.
What about no, don't you understand?
In fact, let me even go further than that, because
his
I want to change the constitution...
Let him respond.
The reason that I want to have the governor clarify his position further, the original version of the charter bill that he put into the legislature actually called for the removal of the prohibition on aid to private and religious schools.
Absolutely
he himself has said the Noah Webster Academy...
Congressman, you used to be a professor.
He himself has said the Noah Webster Academy was a creative use of charter school funds.
But he just said here tonight, if that amendment was on the ballot,
he would
vote no.
And, Congressman, let me point out that if I wanted to change the Constitution, I could support a constitutional amendment this year that would have a whole constitutional convention to open up the Constitution. I'm opposed to that, too.
Well, so am I.
Where is your proposal? That's an amendment to the Constitution to eliminate these guilty pleas.
And I support that.
Good for you.
Governor, are you guilty of a flip-flop here? Because in the second debate, you were given a chance to say no to this issue, and you said you would take a look at it. Have you changed your mind?
No, I haven't changed my mind. I'm just continuing on with my position here. Because in the second debate...
So you're refining your position for us.
Well, yes, because in the second debate...
Well, why couldn't you do that in the second debate and simply say no?
Well, because what was asked was a hypothetical question. You've just tried to make it very specific about aid to religious schools, and I don't support that.
You do support aid to private schools, though.
I don't know if I support aid to private schools. That's not on the ballot, and private schools are not religious schools.
But I thought the amendment to the Constitution that Tim was talking about was to eliminate the present prohibition
on religious
aid to religious
schools,
and private
schools. No public funds to religious schools. That's
and
my
private schools, Governor? Are you going to take public tax dollars and give them to private schools? It is the public public school system of the state that working families of the state depend upon.
Let it be a no. Because I think that's the best way to deal with it is absolutely not. Because our Constitution in Michigan is very clear. And let's set the record straight for everybody across the country who's listening and saying, why is this issue up in Michigan? 24 years ago, our Constitution was amended, closed the door. In Michigan today, our Constitution says no public funds for private or religious schools.
Governor, I know the Constitution says.
And there are no amendments.
Why are you trying to change it?
I'm not trying to change it, Congressman.
Why do you serve on the Board of Directors of Americans for School Choice?
Because I believe that parents ought to have choice.
I believe that parents ought to have choice.
You exercised a choice when you sent your son to Interlochen Academy, a private school, and now you don't want to give poor and middle-class parents the opportunity to send their children to to schools where they could have a better education.
Congressman, for a response.
Yeah, the issue really is not, of course, the value of private schools or religious schools,
well,
for that matter.
Well, are you against private schools?
Absolutely not.
Do you support spending public funds?
In fact, my son, as was indicated, went to both public and schools,
sure,
and also to
sure
the North Arts Academy. The issue is whether public tax dollars should leave the public school system and be diverted into private schools.
Is there a difference between a private school and a religious school in your mind?
Under the Michigan Constitution, there's a flat prohibition on aid to either private religious schools.
All right, let me...
And nobody's seeking to
change that.
There's nothing pending. The congressman's created a straw man.
Governor, your actions.
Let's go back to
the Board of Directors of Americans for School Choice. That is the organization
leading the campaign nationally.
Absolutely.
Proud to do that.
That's leading the campaign nationally to allow public tax dollars to go into private schools.
And a lot of other things.
Why are you on the Board of Directors if that's not
Because I believe that one of the other goals is critically important. It's a goal that we've now largely achieved in Michigan. It's a goal you oppose. But it says to parents who are trapped in a school district that's not performing that they will have some choices and some options.
Right,
I believe.
Gentlemen, I'm going to call time on this issue. We're going to move on.
Let's explain what the charter school law is, because I think that's something that Congressman and I disagree on.
The courts today put that law on hold.
But he wants to repeal the law. The courts will uphold the law. There's no question about that.
I think that's a big question.
I don't think so, because Michigan has made a statement. We've got 1.6 million children in our public schools. Fewer than 160,000 are not in those schools. But with the kids that are in the public schools, we're saying today that teachers and parents and students have some choices. The same kind of choice that you chose when you said, I'm going to send my child to a private school. And I don't think that any child anywhere in Michigan, in an urban area, in a suburban area, in a remote rural area, ought to be condemned to a school that's not working. We've got great schools in this state.
I'd like to respond, if I may, please. Two points need to be underscored. First of all, we have had charter schools in Michigan for a long time. In Detroit and other communities, we've had magnet schools, we've had school math and science academies, we've had a whole range of options.
Then why do you oppose
them? I do not within the public school system. What I do oppose is a change in the state law. The only purpose of that was to open the door for dollars going to private schools.
But of
the charter schools that have already received charters, under John Engler's law, the majority are in fact private schools, doing nothing new, nothing innovative, nothing creative.
Bottom line is nearly a dozen schools are getting charters, are on the verge of getting 30 more applications are pending at Central Michigan University, Wayne State University.
That's exactly right.
And we will have many, many more.
I have no doubt about that.
When a charter school is chartered, they are chartered as a public school. They must be open to all.
So they cannot discriminate.
So
when a private school gets the public grant, that makes it a public school. That's great.
It's really exciting. Absolutely. It's exciting. Interlochen, for example,
could
become a
public school. Mr. Wolpe, do you think your opponent is running for higher office?
I have no idea. That's something you ought to ask my opponent.
Are you?
Yes, I'm running for governor for the second term, and I think that's a higher office.
Is that a lousy question? Higher office other than the one you are in?
No, I'm not running for anything.
Will you do a Sherman for us here tonight?
Sure, I'm not going to run for anything else. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to be here for 4 years. Much to the chagrin of the liberal Democrats in this state, we're going to stay here and finish an agenda of cutting taxes. Michigan's economy is moving today. 5.5% unemployment rate is the best in 21 years.
Okay. Governor, did you serve in the armed services?
No.
How did you get out? How did you stay out?
I was deferred.
On what basis?
Student deferment.
Student deferment. Mm-hmm. And did you serve in the armed services?
How
did you get out?
As well.
You had a deferment
mm-hmm.
as well. Didn't you guys think about volunteering? Don't you want to service to your country? Isn't that an appropriate thing to do?
Well, I'll answer that one because I went into public service. I went to the legislature, nominated at the age of 21, elected at the age of 22.
It's quite the same thing of putting your life on the line for your country, though, is it?
No, but it's a service.
I felt that I was making my own contribution at the time, both as a student.
And you were in college at the time?
Oh, yeah. This was back in the late 50s.
Are you willing to trade favors for votes in the legislature?
We negotiate in the legislature. Some people in the media call that trading favors, but you can bet. I mean, the issue that... Congressman raised was brought to us by legislators on the cigarette tax. Let's talk about that one, because that's an interesting one.
No, wait a second. I'm talking about legislative style now. You do trade.
Absolutely, you negotiate.
Okay, and we call it trading, you call it negotiating,
right.
But something is exchanged for votes in the process.
Policy? I mean, back and forth on issues?
No, not policy. You'll remember this question. If somebody came to you and said, I'll give you a vote.
In the summer job?
Yeah,
you know.
Right. Okay, you saw that program.
I did see that
okay.
program.
Well, how would you have answered that question?
I'd be willing to listen, you know, because...
So you'd be willing to trade?
But, you know, I would... Sure, because I'm willing to work on solving problems. And some of these problems, if you're talking about cutting taxes, and, you know, I'm not willing to give a make-work job. I won't trade something that's not fair. I won't give somebody an advantage. I won't let them take cuts in the line. But if you say, you know...
All right, well, if you saw that program, you heard the congressman's answer.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it?
It probably wasn't accurate, I think that it's not going to even consistent with his own career.
Congressman?
I said I don't think it's appropriate to trade favors. I think that it's appropriate to deal on legislation and policy issues, and sometimes you enter into those kinds of
things. If you were elected governor and that kind of a scenario was played out, you're simply going to say no, even if it means advancing your program. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you find that to be a bit naive?
I do.
Okay.
And I think the important thing is...
I think people are tired of the kind of wheeling and dealing that goes on in politics all of the time.
I think it goes on in Washington. I think that's
what Washington... I think it goes on in Lansing all of the time.
What's wrong with wheeling and dealing? Isn't that part of the process?
Depends on... When you're talking about trading off jobs for votes, that ought not be part of the process. If you're talking about legislative trading and negotiation, that's a different matter.
What scares you about this job?
Scares you about this job? Nothing about the job specifically. I'm concerned about the challenges that the state faces that have been neglected, that are not being discussed honestly. I think it's time that we had a governor that trusted people enough to really lay out the kinds of challenges that lie before us. I want Michigan to be a high-skill, high-wage economy. I think that when we hear about all the talk about Michigan coming back, we all understand that there's been an uptick because of the national economic recovery. But we're a cyclical economy, and the real issue is whether we're going to have a governor that cares more about the next generation than simply the next election. And I've laid out, and this may just say to him, and I've laid out in the course of this plan, of this campaign, a plan, a 12-point agenda for school reform, a plan to get the economy moving again, a plan to deal with issues of crime and violence. It's not the governor's agenda, that's for sure.
In your private moments at home, when you sit at home quietly and you think about being governor, there's nothing that goes through your mind and say, yeah, I'm a little apprehensive about that.
Oh, of course. I mean...
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, but...
What is that?
Just the enormity of building consensus to get the state moving again on some really key issues. I believe I can do that. I would not be running for governor if I didn't feel I could.
Scares you about the job?
I think now it's can we match the success in the second term with the first term? The first term has been so spectacular in so many ways, so many agenda items. 110 bills in our criminal justice package enacted into the law. Can we get as much done in the second term? We're going to have more help in the legislature. That's changing. That's going to be a more positive environment. But, I mean, the expectations are so high now because we've done so well in the first 4 years.
Are you going to have a Republican legislature?
Yes.
No question about it.
No question about
it. How many
that.
Seats in the House?
60.
60.
60 in the House, probably 25 in the Senate.
You agree with that analysis?
Absolutely not. Democrats are going to take control, House and Senate, this time.
Are you now a drag on the Democratic ticket?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, we are going to have an absolutely a tremendous both grassroots
sure.
turnout.
You're going to take both the
so,
House
yeah.
and the Senate?
We're going to take both the House and the Senate.
Okay, do you think he's a drag on the Democratic ticket? Play reporter for a second.
No, I don't know that he's a drag on the ticket. I think the ticket's a drag.
Well, I mean, it's not too surprising hearing John Engler characterize the Democratic ticket. But it's about as accurate as characterizing his own record. We have a state right now which has seen a tremendous increase in the rate of violent crime. People everywhere are living, feeling unsafe, insecure.
But isn't
We've
there
got a mental health system. Well, let me just finish
sure.
a second, Tim. We have a mental health system that is in absolute disarray. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars more. People are getting less mental health service. We've got so many people who do not have the skills they need to survive in the new kind of economy that's emerging. We need
that's
job
why
training.
We, change
we
the
need to strengthen and change public education.
Absolutely.
The governor says that
absolutely.
Well, all is well.
Having been in politics,
the
you
state
know
government.
That, excuse me, that you know that perception is reality. Certainly, you must have heard on the street since the last polling data came out that there is a feeling that you're in trouble. All right, will you concede that?
No, I will not.
20 points down in the polls, and you won't concede you're in trouble.
No more so than John Engler was 4 years
were you
ago.
You 20 points behind at this juncture?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a clue, but I know I had an agenda, and he doesn't. I know that...
In fact, was.
I know that...
Okay, so you are not worried at all. You're going to pull this thing out.
We are going to pull this thing out. Because it's the last 4 weeks that people have sent in. These debates, incidentally, have helped to draw the distinction.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Governor,
I agree with that because this
rally, excuse me. At a recent political rally on the Capitol steps, this kind of rhetoric was used.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Attorney General was called, quote, Butch Reno. The Human Health Services Director was labeled Donna Shalala, that lesbian. Another person told Sarah Brady, quote, to go to hell. And Michigan Attorney General Frank Kelly was called a gun-grabbing Gestapo Attorney General. Does a governor of the state have a moral obligation to denounce that kind of rhetoric?
Well, I certainly don't support that. I didn't hear the rhetoric.
I'll
denounce
it
tonight.
What do you think? You
will denounce it tonight. Sure, that has no appropriate place in public discourse. I believe in a vigorous debate. I've never shied away from debating the issues, and I think it's important.
But this is inappropriate, is it not?
Of course it's inappropriate. I think that any of the personal kinds of attacks, I think any using of tragedies for personal gain is also inappropriate.
Do you agree that this stuff is inappropriate?
Oh, absolutely.
Then why didn't you say something when people were calling him a Nazi and a Hitler?
Oh, I did say something. I thought that was very wrong and inappropriate.
Did you hear him say anything about that?
I missed it. I'll take his word that somewhere it was uttered.
I think it was wrong.
Just didn't get written down anywhere by anyone. I didn't hear any reaction to, I think, some of the campaign commercials that have been run by the congressman's campaign that have tried to really pick up on things like Lafayette Clinic. And, you know, let's talk about that for a moment.
Oh,
because
I'm glad you
I think our mental health programs in Michigan are models for the nation. In fact, I just saw a letter today from a strong Democrat in the Upper Peninsula who is one of President Clinton's new appointees to a national advisory board who is very distressed at your campaign. He's apologizing for the campaign that you've run on mental health issues. And he said he goes all around the country, and he's filled with pride at what we've done in Michigan and is embarrassed at what he sees in the terms of treatment of mental health and those other
states. Let me say to you, Governor, as clearly as I can say,
so I think that
what you did in forcing those patients out of Lafayette Clinic using the state troopers to force their eviction should never have happened in this state.
Well, Congressman, let's start with the facts right now.
Secondly,
state troopers were not forcing anyone out. State troopers were there to protect those who were being moved according to a plan. The Lafayette, let's just stop there. Do you agree with that?
No, I do not. The state troopers were called in because the
make
local...
Make a statement. You're saying that state troopers forced people out. I think that's wrong.
I said you forced them out.
You should apologize to the Michigan State Police.
What were the state troopers doing?
The state troopers were there at John Engler's order to supervise the eviction of these patients.
So he knows that. Now, notice how
it was John Engler that forced them out of that institution.
Just change directions here.
He's afraid of another court injunction being issued. His only concern was getting ahead of the court injunction.
The Court of Appeals actually had to order the Wayne Circuit Court's governor not to get involved.
There's no way
whatsoever. Expand services, Congressman. And we've got people in your party apologizing for your campaign. Tonight, do you apologize for your campaign?
Absolutely
you do not,
Governor.
And so you think this Democrat in the Upper Peninsula
you ought to apologize.
Right, Governor, let me ask you, do you think that situation could have been handled more humanely?
Absolutely.
All right, do you accept that as a response to that situation?
Oh, absolutely, but what I'm trying but the point needs to be understood is that Lafayette is not an unique circumstance. Because of the governor's failure to provide any kind of planning as we've closed down institutions, you have the same kind
did
of...
Did he not have a plan in position
absolutely
that was held up by the courts back and forth?
No, each individual patient, the congressman knows that.
Is that true?
The patients fell through the cracks. There was no continuity of treatment for the patients that were in Lafayette Clinic.
All right, gentlemen, I want to move
one
to another
One woman died, and that happened in other institutions as well.
I'm going to call time on that. All right, one of the issues that governors have to deal with is budget priorities, and it's a very complex thing for voters to understand. I have a little handout for you here. Pretend you got $1,000 to divvy up. Jimmy, let's go to the slide and take a look. Take a couple of seconds here and put a dollar amount into each one of those services. Teacher salary increases, attracting new businesses, hiking welfare benefits, state police, reducing college tuition, and build more prisons. Divvy up the $1,000 into those areas so that the people can get a sense as to where your budget priorities
are. Since there aren't any rules, Tim, I don't think either one of us have to do this tonight.
You certainly don't, but I'd appreciate it if you played the game.
Let me tell you about my budget priorities, because when I took office,
this is
I had
important.
A 1.8...
Wait a minute, this is important for the people to understand where your priorities are.
This is a hypothetical again. I mean, I'm happy.
Hypothetical? This happens every year, Governor, doesn't it?
But this is about next year's budget, perhaps. And let's deal with what I dealt with as a governor taking office in 1991, facing a 1.8. I'm happy to fill it out, but it's a little game. And I think we're on C-SPAN, Tim. People all over the country are watching us, and I think they're wondering, what is this guy doing here with this kind of a little game? Bottom line is, in terms of appropriations process, I'll tell you what my priorities are. They're reflected in what we did. We solved a $1.8 billion budget, and our top priorities were education and law enforcement. Those are the two big winners.
So of those, you would cut tuition and give more money to the state police then?
We have salaries there that we have to pay. We would have to keep our prison system functioning. We've done that.
All right, let me try this then. Mm-hmm. Out of all those six, give me your top priority then. Will you play that game with me? Out of those six things on that...
Law enforcement.
Law enforcement, Mr. Wolpe.
I think it would be both law enforcement and college tuition on this one.
Okay. Mr. Wolpe, do you think teachers should lose a day's pay for each day they're on strike?
I oppose that law that passed.
Do you think they should be docked?
Oh, forever. They should not be paid while they're on striking, absolutely.
You agree with that?
Yeah.
But the rest of the law you did not. That's the first time you heard him say that.
No. They should not be paid.
They should not be paid if they're out on strike.
That's right.
You agree with that?
Congressman, also support repealing a law that penalizes them a day's pay for a day on strike. So
I oppose that law.
And hypocritical. You need to sort this out for the listeners tonight.
Teachers have never gotten paid.
Let me take back the question, make sure we're talking on the same sheet here. Should a teacher lose a day's pay if the teacher is on strike?
That's historically the way it's always been. Teachers have not gotten paid while they're on strike.
But they caught up with the money at the end by adding on the days.
If the days were added on,
all right, then the question is, should they be docked the money and not be able to recoup it?
They should be paid for the work they do, not for work they're not doing.
Okay, so they should not be docked.
Not if they're doing the work.
Okay. All right. So if
they should be
in other words, there's not
work.
A parallel here between the UAW worker that goes on strike and loses money and the teacher that goes on strike.
The UAW worker is out of work, comes back, and is on overtime. He gets paid for that overtime following the strike. It's the same parallel.
Well, let me just say that that legislation had nothing to do with teacher strikes. It had everything to do with John Engler's vendetta against the teachers. I mean, sometimes I wonder...
Again, it's misguessed.
You spend so much time going after teachers. I've got to ask you if you had some bad experience years ago with some teacher that put you in the corner.
I admire classroom teachers all over the state. And I spend a lot of time in classrooms talking to classroom teachers. And
you do have it in for the MEA leadership.
Oh, absolutely. The staff of the MEA, I think, is overpaid and, frankly, largely irrelevant to education.
Do you think teachers are overpaid?
No, you can't pay a good teacher too much. I don't have any problem with that. My concern is that today's system mandates that we pay an exemplary teacher no more than we pay a teacher who's half as good.
Governor, if you're such an ardent supporter of term limits, why have you been in this town for 24 years?
I've been trying to limit my term every time. I always take chances every time I run.
It seems on the surface to be
I'm the only governor. I am the only governor in America who filed a brief in support of term limits. I left the House
after... But that was after 20 years in the legislature.
I left the House after 8 years.
Well, how did you get religion on this issue, sir?
I've always supported that. Back in 1971 and 72, I supported a unicameral legislature.
If you supported term limits, then why did you continue to run for re-election? Why didn't you bail out after 6 years?
I left after 8. Took on an incumbent that nobody said I could beat. It was up or out for me. Same thing in the Senate.
Do you find that inconsistent at all? You are against term limits, by the way, right?
Except for this year. I intend to limit John Engler's term this year. I am against term limits because, as I've said in the past, there's nothing more dangerous than a lame duck legislator. And I think that voters have the chance to limit the terms of any elected official each election.
I think, again, that's just one more example of how sort of the limousine liberals in America really are out of touch with where the people are.
It's not the labels,
I think that fits. It really does fit because I think people want today accountability in government. I think they want a government that gets smaller, not larger. I think they don't want a professional class in Congress taking charge of every aspect of their life. Take your record in Congress. I mean, you've consistently voted against giving the states options to set their own policy. You've voted
If there's anyone who is passing responsibilities that ought to be properly the states down to local governmental units, it has been you.
Oh, absolutely not.
Look at what you did with 911 service. Eliminated the state level, forced local units to...
And gave them the funding.
Governor, you came to this town in 1970. Do you think you became a better legislator the longer you stayed here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
And that experience counted for something in the process, didn't it?
Well, sure did.
Okay, so why would you throw out people that have experience?
Because I think the process doesn't work very well today. I think that we need changes. I think that the public is so cynical and so frustrated about the kind of games they've seen, particularly coming out of Washington, that I think that... the case for term limits outweighs the argument against. I concede there are arguments against it,
but you haven't always been for term limits. I mean, you didn't arrive in this town in favoring term limits. Is that correct?
It wasn't an issue 20 years ago.
Right. Mr. Wolpe, do you favor extending health care benefits to state employees who are domestic partners of the same sex?
I'd be prepared to consider that. I haven't...
Well, consider it right now. Yeah. Philosophically, is that a reasonable thing to do?
It's something that I think ought to be examined. I wouldn't want to make a firm commitment because I would want to know more about the full ramifications.
It's been around. Some local cities, universities in this state are doing it. MSU is considering it. Wayne State is doing it.
And I would be prepared to consider that.
But you're not going to take a stance on it here.
Not to see. I don't know of any state that's done it yet, and I would like to look at it first.
He's not reluctant to speculate about constitutional amendments that haven't been written.
You would oppose
it. I oppose it.
What's wrong with it?
I think that it's appropriate for state government just to stand up for traditional values, and in this case, I think that we don't need to go that far. It's an additional benefit expansion. Our health care costs are very high right now.
Should banks be allowed to sell insurance?
I think they're going to be. The federal law is now allowing that. That's a very contentious issue in this state. The issue that we've tried to work with is making sure that we don't have any kind of a coercive situation that exists where if you're going to the bank for the home loan, that the bank isn't saying, oh, by the way, as long as you're here.
If that safeguard is in that bill pending in the Senate, then you would support it.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be driven there by what has happened with the national banks already. I also think we're very close. There's been some rather intense negotiations that have been going on between the different parties. I think we're close to having this worked out.
Congressman.
No, I do not believe that banks should be in the business of selling insurance. I think there needs to be the firewall, the separation, and I think that would only lead to substantial abuse against the consumer.
Governor, what's wrong with Mr. Wolpe's suggestion to give scholarship aid to certain state and federal prisoners?
I think prisoners are in prison to be punished. I think that prisoners ought to learn basic literacy skills, but the idea, I disagree completely. When you're in Congress, voting to give Pell Grants to prisoners makes no sense whatsoever to me.
What if it rehabilitated them and got them out of prison?
I don't care.
Go
to prison, get a scholarship, give me a break. I mean, this state is filled up with people that are working hard, working two jobs, going to school in the evening, trying to get ahead with their education. One of the hardest questions I ever had posed to me was with a prison guard down at Jackson Prison who said to me, look, I'm working, my wife's working, my daughter's trying to go to school to get a degree in criminal justice, and we've got prisoners sitting in here, and the taxpayers are paying for them. I'm paying for them, and I'm upset about it.
Isn't that true, that prisoners ought to be there to do their time and not go to college?
Not only do their time, but first of all, it would be good if we kept prisoners in our prisons. We have more holes in our prisons right now. It's been a terribly mismanaged
system. But to the scholarship
issue,
sir.
And I believe that we want prisoners to come out of prison with some skills so they're not going to return to a life of crime. I think that's investment
Doesn't that make sense, Governor? Public safety.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's more that fuzzy liberal thinking, and it's consistent with a guy that would take a contribution from Michigan's most liberal circuit judge, circuit judge who thinks the prisoners ought to get
into the
witness
subject
fees.
What do you have against rehabilitation?
I don't have anything against rehabilitation. I have, as a taxpayer and as a citizen, I object. I think it's time we stand up for people who play by the rules. I mean, the idea... I mean, we had people, actually, when we were talking about kicking kids out of school, bring guns. They said, well, yeah, give them a tutor. Bring a gun, get a tutor? I think that's dumb policy. Go to prison, get a Pell Grant, according to the congressman's vote, is dumb policy.
Whenever we get around to the subject of crime, John Engler loves to talk tough, but this is the same John Engler who cut state police trooper strength, who attacked the crime laboratories.
State police budget's up a couple $100 million.
Who has led to a prison system that is so mismanaged that we had the largest prison escape in 70 years.
Cut the prison outbreaks in half, Congressman.
Governor, Governor, you talk like Dirty Harry, but you really act like Barney Fife.
Got that line written
you
there?
You look at Barney Fife. You really do.
Really?
This has been a totally mismanaged
Is it not true that you allowed state trooper strength to dip from 1990 to 1994 by 196 troopers?
I don't know if it's down probably.
It is down, Governor.
There's no question it's down. We had in 92 156
In your first 2 years, why did you cut state troopers?
We didn't cut them. They weren't laid off. What we had...
The trooper strength was down.
Trooper strength went down because of layoffs.
And the people were not replaced.
Weren't being offset by the troopers.
And people were not replaced.
We'll have a record number of troopers in place
now. Why did you allow that to occur?
Tim, I couldn't stop them from retiring.
Why didn't you replace them? That's the question.
We are replacing them, but you don't...
Why didn't you replace them then?
Because it takes a while to train a state trooper. You've got to have the school. Yeah. We're doing that now. And
there were no schools.
Well, let me tell you what we did.
Is that right? There were no schools.
They began. We started
2 years after.
Let me tell you what else we did, though. We took 70 troopers who were behind desks doing 911 jobs, put them on patrol. We changed the command structure. We put more people out.
So you're not apologizing for this downstroke.
Oh, no. In fact, strength on the road, let's be clear on this. Strength on the road stayed very, very comparable in terms of troopers and miles covered, miles patrolled. We don't have any problem with that, but the numbers aren't the whole story on this one. But we're now back in a position, we'll have a record number of troopers.
If the strength on the road stayed the same, what's the beef?
At the end of this year, because he's trying to pretend that he was really supporting the state trooper strength, the fact of the matter is he cut that strength. It will not be where it was when he came into office, even at the end of his term. Secondly, John Engler's corrections department is doing right now? It has gone into court on the side of the criminals, on the side of those parolees who have broken the law, who have committed another crime.
No.
A court has held that those people ought to be finishing the entire part of their entire maximum sentence for their first crime before they start serving the second
sentence. Connie Binsel over here, she started telling that story about
John Engler's Department of Corrections has gone into court appealing that decision. Now, that's how tough this governor is.
Governor.
Well, again, he misses the point. We're implementing a circuit court decision that we like that says we have to be tough.
Why are you appealing it, then, if you like it?
Because there are some ambiguities that will lead to endless lawsuits, and we know just the judge they'll go to. They'll probably be
upon
Judge Giddings. The ambiguities are about whether or not we have the ability to sentence somebody who's committed a second crime while they're out on parole.
Of course, been very
clear. We've reformed the parole board. No, they haven't.
Of course, been very clear. They're simply saying that if a parolee commits a crime,
let me tell you what we've done. We've changed the parole board.
The entire sentence of their initial crime. That's what would happen if Wolfie Stabenow was
Our Dirty Harry wannabe over here doesn't have the support of any of the law enforcement. I've got 20,000 law enforcement officers that are supporting me in this campaign.
Why don't you answer the original question, Governor?
We've implemented the policy, Congressman, and
you're wrong on your characterization.
Mr. Wolfie, if single women have more children, should they not receive larger welfare payments from the state? Agree or disagree? If a welfare mother has more children, should she get more money from the state for having more kids?
Well, I do not want to create a situation where the children are penalized for the actions of the parents.
So the parents should get more money?
Well, for the child, not directly for the adult, but
isn't
for the
child. Isn't that an indirect way of saying if you get more kids, you get more state dollars?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that I want to see fundamental change in the welfare system, and I think there are a number of things that need to happen. Including making clear that...
I understand, but on this point, you think if the mother has more kids, then more money ought to be given to the children or the mother or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think that the child needs to be cared for one way or the other, and I think it's a lot cheaper to allow the mother to handle that than have
Governor,
the child...
Governor, do you favor that?
The taxpayer's burden entirely.
What we've done with welfare reform is create a national model in Michigan. We've got one in four parents.
Well, I know. Well, the question was, does a welfare mother, if she has more kids, get more state money? You favor it or not?
It's an open question. Today we pay more money. If you have more children, you get a little bit more money.
Why is it an open question?
Because some states have actually gone to limit on family size. In other words, if you go on public assistance, you've got one child, that's it. It's flat grant from that point forward. That's something we've looked at. It's not something we've adopted. The reforms that we've adopted have gone a little different direction. We've tried to get rid of some of the barriers to prevent work. Some of the incentives now say that if you go to work, if you're on public assistance, and you go to work, you can keep the first $200 you earn. Today, we have one in four parents on welfare today earning money. The national average is fewer than one in 10. Right. So those are the kind of reforms that have gained us national attention.
Governor, you want to add just 30 seconds to that or 20?
Well, the reality is that there are 30,000 more people today on AFDC.
Is that true,
than there were when the governor came into
office? Is this your problem? It's not a prop, but it's a fact. You want to stand by that? Because I can give you the exact
numbers. We don't have a debate rule against props.
All right, we won't open this up, but the numbers are here. You want to stand by this, right? And you'll apologize when you're wrong, because that's exactly what you are, is wrong on that. We have 75,000 fewer people on public assistance today, Congressman. You've made an error in your numbers, and you repeated it. We told you after the last debate you were wrong on this. I think the difficulty is you can't stand the good news.
I would love to take a look at those numbers.
Because Michigan is
okay, I think we're going to agree to disagree on the numbers.
Oh,
here.
Sure.
Is that a fair statement?
Sure,
that's fine.
All right, let me move to another area. Governor, if you could today, would you eliminate public employee unions?
We could today. The Civil Service Commission could do it. We haven't done that. I don't see a need to do
that. If reelected, would that be on your agenda?
No.
Absolutely not. Well, you said some nasty things about public employee unions. You said that in reference to, I think, Detroit, there was a cabal between political leadership and union leadership, and the treasury was looted. That's not exactly a glowing endorsement of the labor movement down there.
This says nothing about the men and women who work hard every day. We've got people all over state government. I think we should give more opportunities. That doesn't mean you have to eliminate the union at all. I think that we ought to. It's a tragedy today when we've got a need to fill a vacancy in one department. We've got somebody who could do the job in another, and the rules prevent us from getting that person over there. But often that isn't even the union's fault.
You do want to go in and tinker with the civil service system, though, don't you?
No, it's not a question of tinkering with the civil service system. We have a system that is in our Constitution. I mean, if I wanted to tinker with the civil service system, I guess the easiest way to do it would be support having a new constitutional amendment and rewrite the article.
Would you?
No, I oppose the proposal.
Do you think it's on his agenda to decimate the public labor unions?
I haven't heard him enunciate that. I think his agenda generally, though, has been very, very hostile to working people and to their bargaining rights. And I think he's trashed public employees time and time again.
Morale within public service.
I think that the way you get people to improve productivity, we've learned this in the private sector, is to get workers involved in decision making.
All right, Governor, you said earlier
we have 5,000 fewer people working in state government today, and I'm proud.
And how many more will there be in 4 years if you're reelected? Less. How many?
There will be less. I don't know how many.
2,000 to 3,000?
Oh, I don't have a number. I mean, attrition.
I thought it was a 5,000 number.
Attrition will reduce the number somewhat.
You also have 5,000 people on personal service contracts. This is the governor who promised to reduce the value of personal service contracts by $200 million. He's actually increased it by $200 million.
Is that true?
$400
million off?
Personal contracts up?
Right. No. No, they're not.
They're down below Mr. Blanchard.
And they're not 5,000 people that are on direct hire?
I don't know what we have in the mental health system.
Right, we
there
have another disagreement
some of the people
on numbers
who care
here,
for
gentlemen. Okay,
there
we are going to resolve.
Well,
all right,
sure.
Governor, you said earlier in the program that you're predicting here tonight that there will be Republican control of government. Tell me, in specific terms, the top three things, the first three laws you want to change, if that indeed comes to pass.
Get the juvenile prison up and built.
One?
That's very, very important. Implement the rest of the welfare reform agenda. We've now got our waivers from the federal government. We want 100% of the people on welfare working. We think that's very important. And the third one would be, I've got several in third place, I guess, finish the environmental code, that's important. In the education area, I think that we've got some challenges with the whole accountability and reform movement that we want to continue
to pursue. Before I ask you the same question, do you believe that agenda? What do you think his top three items will really be, in your mind?
Well, I'm not going to question about the items.
Are you by that? All right, agenda. What would your top three items be if you were elected and you had a democratically controlled legislature?
Education is my number one priority. I would instantly reopen the Michigan Education Trust so middle-class families can have the ability to send their kids on to college. I would make certain that public funds are no longer being diverted into private institutions. We're going to have public funds for public schools, and we would launch the major reform agenda, meaning new curriculum, tough world-class standards, the whole 12-point agenda that I laid out earlier in
the
campaign. Number two would be there's going to be a different attitude about working families in the state, and we're going to be on the side of the consumer for a change. I would introduce, for example, insurance reform legislation that would provide for real insurance reform with a 20% rate rollback, not the kind of phony effort that's been constructed by the insurance companies, John Engler's assistants.
Three.
Third, I would direct the Department of Treasury to use the funds that are there right now for investment in businesses in the state rather than out of the state. There's $1 billion authority that the governor has, right, and that money is being diverted out of Michigan.
Let's shift back to crime for just a second. Of all the dollars spent in the state on crime, what percentage do you think ought to go to fighting crime and what percentage to rehabilitation or preventing crime, Governor? Percentage-wise, 50-50, 60-40, what's the number?
I think I don't know what our percentages are today, but I think we're in the ballpark today. We're going to have...
What should it be, though, in your mind?
Well, I think it should be all spent on fighting crime, the rehabilitation.
And not on preventing crime, is that correct?
Well, fighting crime is preventing crime, Tim. I mean, I don't know how you're slicing this apple up here, but...
I guess what I'm going for is maybe some Head Start program to teach kids so they don't get into crime.
We're doing that. We've expanded. I mean, one of the uses of the charter schools, another group that is strongly in disagreement with Congressman Hope here, the pastors in Grand Rapids and Detroit, who are looking at charter schools, possibly allowing them now to have these children, young children who are most at risk, who are today in Head Start programs, actually in programs from age 3 to grade 3 year-round. So they're always being cared for. They're always being in a nurturing environment where they are learning to read. They're learning their basic skills.
Congressman, your percentage breakdown.
Well, what was the percentage you gave initially?
For fighting crime and preventing crime.
I can't give you specific percentages. I will say this, that the emphasis ought to be much more, I would argue. We got to do both. We got to do equal emphasis upon punishment and upon prevention. Let me just explain what I mean. We've got to use the prison space to lock up violent felons. We need to make sure that the violent felons are off of the streets. Finish. That's why I support truth in sentencing, so 20 years means 20 years. At the same time, I think there are things we can do, like the drug court proposal that I've advanced, where we say to nonviolent drug offenders, we'll give you an option here. You can go to prison if you want, or you can enter a drug program and come out of that clean. That's a heck of a lot cheaper way of saving dollars. And a smaller investment, the reason it's difficult to put this in percentage terms, is it doesn't even take that much money to make that pay off. You don't have to spend $35,000 a year to house a nonviolent drug offender.
Okay, Mr. Wolpe, if you could, would you eliminate the cap on property tax that was in Proposal A so that it would generate more money for local units of government?
No, I'm not proposed that.
What would be wrong with that? Don't these local, aren't these...
I'm glad you switched your position. That's very good news.
Did you change your position?
Sure. You opposed Proposal A.
I proposed Proposal A, but not on that basis.
Opposed cut and cap and opposed the...
I opposed Proposal A because it did not provide full funding for public education and because it provided a tremendous tax shift onto some of the most...
Local municipalities have lost now a revenue stream, which they say is really hurting them as a result of this, that they would like to... But you're not on their side on this one.
No, I have not. I'm not supporting
And I assume you are not either.
No, I'm supporting the opportunities for growth in local communities that are coming about as a result of Michigan's improved economy. We're also, I think, helping local communities a great deal with the environmental reforms that we're making to make it easier to reuse some of our cities. That's very much a helpful thing for local government. So I think we've got a strong local government. We've, for the first time, are now funding public health, the 50-50 split on basic core public health services. We're now funding, first time in history. Mental health funding is up dramatically. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we've increased dramatically thanks to state policy here.
All right, Governor, do you think that citizens should have the right to carry a concealed weapon without a concealed weapon permit?
I don't think the current law permits that, and I don't support changing the current
law.
Supported that. I certainly believe in the right to bear arms. I believe the Second Amendment, but I think...
What if I told you that Tom Washington was overheard the other day saying, now we're going to get that? You would oppose that in the legislature.
I'd have to look at it, but I...
Wait a second. You just said you opposed it, and you're going to look at it. Which is it?
But you've just given me, some important information that this is...
That a lobbyist might want the bill, you'll reassess it.
But somebody like Tom Washington is a leader in the conservation movement in the nation and in this state. I mean, I don't...
What does concealed weapons have to do with the conservation movement?
So that's what I'd want to hear from Tom Washington.
You would oppose that?
I would oppose that. This governor is so extreme on the issue that he even thinks that everyone should be able to own assault weapons. I believe in the right of gun ownership. I support hunting. I support sports activity. But I just don't see what weapons of war have to do on the street.
Is that true, Governor?
No, I certainly support the Second Amendment. I believe that what we have to do is what we just finished talking about, is get tough on criminals.
You think citizens have a right to take an Uzi out on the street?
No, that's illegal in Michigan, and I don't support legalizing that. It's an automatic weapon.
That was banned in the crime bill.
That's already banned in Michigan. That's not...
The governor opposed the national crime bill. This is the governor who says he is really tough on crime. This is the crime bill that is going to give 3,400 more police, more cops on the streets in Michigan. It provides more money for prisons. That provides for the banning of the assault weapons. This governor opposed that legislation. That's the kind of initiative that's going to make a difference in terms of safety and security.
I think what makes a difference is locking up criminals and keeping them locked up for a very long time. And that's exactly what we're doing. We've added about 10,000 spaces through double bunking, something that you have not supported.
I have supported double bunking, Governor. You keep saying that.
You keep trying to take an exit out of that.
If it's not having adequate staffing for double bunking, so you endanger both
commercial staff. Oh, we do have adequate staffing.
Have you looked at the
I'm
report?
Glad that you do support the double bunking, though,
There's
because
report,
that's...
Just last Friday, the report came out from the Legislative Correctional Ombudsman's Office indicating that the Ryan facility, where you had this largest prison escape in history, was a facility in which you had the warden for 29 months before the escape, warning that there was not adequate staffing, warning that the security system in place, the detection system, was not working properly. You have a, there's a whole exchange of correspondence. This administration
Did your administration miss those cues?
No, I don't think so. That isn't the issue. I don't think it will. Ryan, I think what we've done in response to Ryan, first of all, let's point out that there have been half as many breakouts under the England administration as there were under the previous Blanchard administration.
In fact,
so we feel very good about that.
Numbers of escapes from correction centers and prisons has increased, gone down.
No, it hasn't.
Another disagreement on numbers.
Well, that is not, I mean, I can tell you how he's creating that disagreement, because he throws in correction centers in order to fuzz the issue up a little bit.
All right.
And what we did is change the policy. We went to a zero tolerance policy. So now, instead of the old policy, if you're gone 24 hours and you showed up again, they never count that as an escape. We said, wait a minute, you're gone 1 minute over the deadline, that's an escape.
Right. So. On the Ryan issue, Governor, are you comfortable with a man who is in charge of security at that prison being a former inmate himself?
No.
You are not?
I'm not.
Did you know that there is a gentleman there that is an ex-con?
We knew that there were some people under the previous administration, unfortunately, that had been treated as rehabilitated and therefore were allowed under civil service to come back in. That's a process that Director McGinnis has stopped.
What are you going to do about this person that's still there
today? I don't know. I mean, he's legally a part of civil service. I'm sure that his union would fight very hard to keep him there. It's just, I believe there are people who can rehabilitate themselves, but I certainly don't like that kind of a policy, period, and I'm glad that we've changed it.
Are you comfortable with that situation?
Not as it's been described. I don't know the circumstances, but I would want to know more.
Okay. Gentlemen, let's move into the area of welfare. Governor, in one of your positions paper, you had suggested the increased use of home visits to root out, quote, welfare fraud and prosecute the violators. Is this the creation of a welfare police? How are you going to do this?
Oh, that's something that historically was part of welfare services, actually, welfare policy. Historically, the caseworker did and was required to make a home visit. Mm-hmm. What's happened in recent years, as caseloads grew, and technology didn't keep up, there was more and more burden. I think one of the toughest jobs in our system is to be a AP worker, be somebody right on the front line. So we're trying to put more people on the front line, cut out middle-level bureaucrats.
But what are these folks looking for when they go in these homes?
Oh, well, the records writer, are people really there? Mm-hmm. We did two test projects, one in Bay City and one in Detroit. We found sufficient evidence that would justify making sure that home visits become a priority. They used to be, I want them to be again. Hopefully in the future what we'll have is everybody working. Our new waivers that we just got approved will allow us now to have to make the social contract a mandatory social contract, 100% working. No more of this business, somebody sitting home getting a check and doing nothing.
Would you increase home visits in order to root out welfare fraud?
I think home visits are very important, yes. But I think even more important is trying to deal with the issues of child abuse and neglect that are occurring. That there's been absolutely no serious attention, and you have cases going up and the personal attention to those cases going down. I think that's a travesty.
Mr. Wolpe, do you favor a ban on tobacco billboards and taking state investment dollars out of pension funds that are invested in tobacco company products?
I've never heard that question presented, but on the face of it, I think I would.
What would you say if I told you your opponent supports that?
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, supports what?
He supports a ban on tobacco billboards.
I welcome that support.
Is that true?
Yeah, I guess who's welcoming who? We've been there.
What have you got against tobacco companies? Don't they have a right of free speech?
Oh, that's the argument, but I think that tobacco is a public health problem and a challenge that we're dealing with. One of the things that's probably one of the best news out of Proposal A is actually cigarette consumption is down about 30%.
All right, for the next couple of minutes or so, ask him a question if you'd like.
Well, I guess the question I would like to ask, because I think it helps draw the contrast between the two of us, is on the issue of abortion. I know that people know that he's anti-choice, that I'm pro-choice. I don't think people realize that the governor is as extreme in his position as he is, which is a position of saying that a woman, even in the case of rape and incest, should not be permitted to have an abortion. I guess what I'd like to do to clarify that is just ask the governor if he would sign a pledge that I've just written out here, that I will sign. I pledge to veto any bill that bans abortion in cases of rape or incest. And if you were to sign that, it would, I think, clarify your position.
Well, I don't have to clarify my position. My position is one of longstanding. You know, I have always been a pro-life legislator. We know that you've been pro-abortion as a legislator. I'm not prepared to sign that. I support legislation, and at this point, under the Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade interpretation, the Michigan law has been nullified. We have a law in the books, and I support our law.
Well, understand.
So let me ask my question.
Let me just understand if I understand the answer here. So he is saying that you will in fact oppose abortion even in the case of rape and incest. You have a 13-year-old girl who has been raped, perhaps by her father or by her mother's boyfriend, and you're saying that even in that instance you would oppose the possibility of abortion.
My position has been one that has been very clear from the beginning. It's that of a pro-life position. I think your position is the extreme one. Your position, as I understand it, and let's talk about it, because I think I can just work right into my question there, because you take the abortion on demand, abortion for sex selection at any time during the pregnancy.
Absolutely.
You let that minor have that abortion without any consent of a parent or a judicial officer. You would insist that the public pay for it. I think that's the extreme position, Congressman, on the abortion issue.
Let me tell you, on this, it is you that have the extreme position. My position is very simple. It's consistent with the Roe versus Wade. I believe that women should be trusted with the right to make that very personal decision. I believe that they should have the right to choose. And as with Roe versus Wade, this was in the first trimester. I did not support abortion on demand. That's a lot of nonsense, and you know that. But what is clear, though, is that you are the one that refuses to countenance an abortion, even in the cases of rape or incest.
Congressman, my position has been consistent throughout my career. I haven't changed it. I don't trim up.
Let me just add one thing, Governor. 4 years ago, you said publicly that you were prepared to consider exceptions to rape or incest. And then it was reported after the election
that
you signed a secret deal, promise with a Barbara Listing of Right to Life, indicating that you would sign legislation that would bar abortion even in the cases of rape and incest.
On this very sensitive topic of, you know, and I think very emotional. I mean, we talk about a rape of somebody that's a family member, somebody that's close to us, somebody that we don't know, but it's reported to us. It's a very difficult question.
I want to be clear here. Do you consider, have you asked a question of him?
No.
You have not? Okay, could you do it very quickly?
All right.
Okay.
Why is not, Congressman, your position on the abortion issue the extremist position?
Because it's consistent with the Roe versus Wade decision. It is consistent with the position that says a woman should be trusted to make her own decision in this area.
Let me just pursue this a little bit more because I got to move the closing statements.
All right. I think that anybody that takes a position that abortion on demand for purposes of
my position.
I think it is.
You said it wasn't. So do you believe my
position is consistent with Roe versus Wade,
which allows.
All right, gentlemen, I do have to call time. Governor, under the rules, you have 1 minute for closing statements, please, sir.
I think in this campaign, as we look at the issues in 1994, it's a question about continuing to go forward to a state that is reforming welfare systems, education systems, that's leading the way in cutting taxes, a state that has gained national attention as we have moved forward with an agenda that sees us with the lowest unemployment rate in 21 years. Congressman Wolpe is a tax and spend liberal. He'll take us back to higher taxes, bigger government, higher costs, more welfare bureaucracy. There is a clear choice. I agree with him on that in this election. A clear choice between moving ahead or going back. And in this campaign, I ask for your support to continue to build upon the foundation. There's much that we've accomplished. We've kept the promises that we made in 1990. We'll build on that agenda as we move forward in the second term. The second term will see more growth and more prosperity and more opportunity for the people of Michigan, because we'll stay the course and we won't turn back to the failed liberal strategies of the past.
Governor, thank you very much for your closing statements. Congressman Wolpe.
Thank you. For too long, people who work hard and obey the law have had no one fighting for them in Lansing. I'm running for governor to change that. I have some pretty strong beliefs, like public funds should go to public schools. I'm going to change public education with real job training and school-to-work apprenticeships to prepare our kids for high-skill, high-wage jobs. And I'll reopen the Michigan Education Trust so middle-class families can send their kids to college. With me, you'll get a governor who will stand up for a woman's right to choose. And I'll fight to keep assault weapons off of our streets. There are some in Lansing that want to pit us off against each other, group against group, Detroit against outstate, labor against management, teachers against parents. I'll be a governor that sees Michigan as one state and one people. We are all in the same economic boat. It's time we had a governor that helped us row together. In short, I'll be a governor that will stand up not for the wealthy and the powerful, but for the working families of Michigan. I'll be a governor that fights for you.
Congressman, thank you for your closing remarks. Gentlemen, good luck to both of you as we move down the campaign trail. Appreciate your participation here tonight. I'm Tim Skubick reporting. Thank you for watching. Good evening.
For an edited transcript of this program,